from the capital city of the state of Oregon, it's Good Morning Salem with Stacy Ann.
Good morning to you. You're listening to Reliable News Talk Radio, KSLM, here together on this terrific Tuesday, the 27th day of April. Joshua Michael in the studio with me today, and we have so much to cover today, Josh. Oh my goodness. It was a great weekend, and I have to say, I was this big sister moment. I was pretty proud of you on the stage at the Parents' Rights in Education Safe School Summit when you were telling the folks what needs to happen and what's going to happen next. And people, I saw a little line of people talking to you afterwards. You know, your story, what you had to share resonated, and it does with our listeners every Tuesday. And I appreciate you coming in the studio with me and sacrificing your sleep in the morning.
Hopefully, and coming in. I'm not sleeping right now.
Yeah, right. Knowing you, you would not be sleeping at 9 a.m. in the morning, but we certainly have appreciated you coming in the mornings. And friends, I want to mention to you that we have some shifting going on here at the morning show, and we've got some great news. We've got a lineup that's coming around the corner about the 24th of May that we will be announcing. Pretty exciting, but I'm going to be, the next couple weeks, I'm going to be on an adventure, going to go see my children and celebrate the birth of my newest grandchild, and then I'm off to Costa Rica for a mission trip. So I'll be out of the studio, out of the area for a couple weeks, and then when we come back, there'll be some transition time. So as we know it right now, the morning show is not going to be as we know it, but we're looking at other ways to keep the information coming to you and looking at podcasts and things and getting more engaged in the community. So stay in tune. But Josh, thank you. You've even filled in for me, and I just want to say thank you and I appreciate you so much. And talk to us a little bit about your impression of the Safe School Summit. And I want to transition. We've got a candidate on the line I want to introduce everybody to, but
sure.
What did you get out of that?
So basically, for everybody that didn't go to the Safe School Summit, it was an organization put on by Parents' Rights in Education in Portland, and it was basically a consolidation of all the misjustices going on within our education system and school mm-hmm. boards and things like that. But it was also an opportunity for upcoming school board member candidates to really showcase themselves mm-hmm. And get an opportunity to meet the public and kind of make a presentation, talk about different scenarios and situations that they've been through, what led them to run, because mm-hmm. if you guys don't know, running for school board is like the fundamental core, the simplest, smallest,
closest to you government
mm-hmm. that exists. And you can have a real impact on, you know, determining policy, what kids are being educated, and really taking a role in your community at a very, very local level.
And it's such a important and often overlooked position. And it's yep. so incredible that these people are stepping up to say yes, that they want to participate. And that is the case of someone I want to introduce you all to. She is running as a slate of four here in the Marion Polk County Salem-Keizer school area. And she's running for Zone 3, and I'm going to bring her on the air right now, but I'm going to give a little introduction before I bring Linda Farrington on the air. Linda is a retired ER and recovery room nurse who has been serving our community for 30 years. Linda led a volunteer project to build bathrooms for one of our schools and review DHS cases in foster care on the Marion County Citizen Review Board. All of Linda's blended family and of kids have graduated from South Salem. So she is a Salem, Oregon resident, has been involved in the community, has leadership, plus she totally gets the whole healthy aspect of our community and certainly going back to school. Thank you, Linda, for joining us this morning. How are you today?
Hi. Excuse me. Thank you very much. I'm so happy to have this opportunity to share with you and talk with you this morning.
Yes. Thank you. You know, our first question always is, why are you running?
You know, it's so important what happens to our kids, because they are determining the future. And I had been for the last several years sort of despondent about what are we going to do about our culture that is changing? How can we make a difference? Because it seems so overwhelming the way things are going now, and that, you know, we don't seem to have much of a chance in some ways to really turn things around. And then when the school board position opened up, I realized that really this is our chance to impact kids because, mm-hmm. you know, they are our future. Even if we don't have kids in the public school system, or if we've taken them out of school or they've graduated already, still what happens in public school matters because these are the kids that become the people that we work around and that make decisions and that vote. And it's just, this is the area I think that we can still win and have a difference on affecting our culture.
Well, it sounds like you've already kind of been involved in regards to building bathrooms in schools. You've already participated. You kind of have an idea. You've already been on committees. You know how this should work, a team of you, to make things happen in the schools. My question to you is, we've been through what an incredible year, and with your health experience and your background, you know, what are your thoughts on being back in school 5 days a week? And what about this whole, a lot of parents are saying, I don't want to send my kids back to school if they have to wear a mask all day or be in sports outside wearing a mask. What are your thoughts on that?
You know, it's very important that as school board directors that we are looking at the big picture and take in all of the data. And so you have to take in the, you know, the subjective data, which is a story and how people feel. And then you have to compare that with the objective data, which are the facts and mm-hmm. what's the cost benefit of every decision that is made. Personally, I have certain views about masks and some of the other precautions that we are taking, but I really feel the most important thing is that kids get back for in-person learning. And if it, for me, if that means wearing a mask, then that is okay, because sometimes I think some of those other issues can be distracting. It is possible for kids to wear masks, and that it does slow things down, even though I don't think it prevents. We know that COVID is airborne, and so it gets around the mask, of course, but it does prevent some infection by preventing droplets. But the most important thing is kids need to have in-person learning, because that's how they grow and develop, and they are wasting away, you know, so much with this lack of connection, because connection is the most important thing they need to be successful. So I would encourage parents to not let masks be a distraction, but let's get the kids back to school and in person 5 days a week. We should have done it yesterday. There's no reason why we can't do it. If there are barriers, whatever the barriers are, we should be figuring that out and finding a way around them, because we've got to get kids back to in-person learning. And
Linda, I'm going to have to interrupt you. I'm going to 100% disagree with you. I think absolutely kids should go back to school, and they should go back to school completely as normal. The masks mm-hmm. don't work. They don't do any help. If the masks, I just have a question for you. And I'm not trying to put you on blast, but if the masks work, why are we mm-hmm. still facing the lockdown measures and the lockdown threats and the ridiculousness that the governor's doing? If they work, don't you think they would have been effective by now? It's been over a year of this.
I understand what you're saying, and I'm not saying that they do work. I'm not saying that they don't work necessarily. What I'm saying is it's not the most important thing. And sometimes you have to compromise in order to get...
No, you don't. What about the increase? What about the increase?
You are not going to get...
What about the increase in childhood depression?
They feel unsafe.
What about the increase in depression in children, suicides in children? And exactly. just the lack of connection that you're exactly. talking about, the lack of connection is because they don't feel comfortable, because they don't want to wear the mask. They don't understand it. They're living in this weird world now where people are dictating who needs to do what. It's,
yeah,
you know, it's...
I agree.
And so...
I agree. And I think though that we can work on that after we get them back in person.
We need to work on it now and just push it through. Absolutely, we can. We just need to push forward, and the parents need to stand up, and the parents need to get involved, and the parents need to reach out and say, we're not going to do this, and stop complying with the mask nonsense.
Well, and that's my question to you, Linda. And this is what we're hearing. This is what we're hearing from our listeners and the parents and what we heard this weekend. So where do you feel as a board member when you're hearing, and that's we want to know what kind of school board member we're going to have when they get on the board, and you're hearing from parents, one thing, but you're hearing from Governor Brown and the Oregon Department of Education that this is what, you know, to be open, you have to wear the mask. So where were you, where do you weight that, and how do you feel about parents and their feedback to you as a school board member?
I think that is so important that we are listening to parents, and I think parents are afraid to speak up today, and I think they're afraid to stand together, and we need to encourage them to do that. I don't see enough of them standing together right now to provide the majority of parents. You know, I think that's why I'm saying maybe the mask is something that we can live with until we get kids back in school and things are going, and they recognize that it's safe.
It sounds like you're someone that would look at the data, and if you have 20,000 parents in the Salem-Keizer School Board that signed a petition saying, we want to be back in school 5 days a week, no mask, you would consider that as enough data to represent and make a good decision. Because really, what we've seen is kind of a woke crowd or a mob that I don't even know if they even have students in the Salem-Keizer area that are picking on our school board candidates and picking on our school board members and trying to push their ideas and their data, which isn't backed up. So it sounds like you're reasonable enough to look at the information, listen to the parents. We have a lot of upset parents right now that are wanting our kids, because of the suicide, because of the, and I went to LC schools 2 weeks ago, and they've been in person all year round, and they're wearing the masks and they're doing the distancing and all of those things. But it's still, the kids are like, when can we get back to normal? When can we have life again? Yeah. And then you probably heard about the student in Bend who was out at the track meet forced to wear a mask, and she passed out, right? It doesn't make sense. And so it's good to talk through these issues and reason together. And I'm glad to hear that you're looking at the data and you're willing to talk to parents about these things. Now, let me ask you this. What kind of help do you need on your campaign right now? How can people get in touch with you and help you get elected?
Well, we just need to spread the word. It's very important to get out the vote in this election, and the other side is rabid to get their progressive agenda through, and we have to show that we care about our kids and about individualism and objectivity and capitalism. So my website is www.lindaforschools.com.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Linda, for your time this morning. We appreciate you calling in this morning and being a part of the morning show. Again, lindaforschools.com. Thank you. Good morning to you, Reliable News Talk Radio, KSLM. Hello, I'm Stacey Ann. Want to say thank you to the Safe Air Network, safeairnetwork.com. Bring clean, safe. safe air and surfaces to your home and business using technology that NASA uses that's chemical-free. Go to safeairnetwork.com today and clean up your air and desanitize your surfaces. So, Josh, you know, go ahead.
I just want to give a quick shout out to Safe Air Network. Thank you guys so much for your sponsorship.
And, while we were talking about, you had that last talk with school board candidate, I pop up a news story that says these masks, a lot like the testing that they're doing, potentially have harmful things that are getting into our lungs. And not only are we rebreathing our carbon, which we're not supposed to, but all the stuff, these fibers that these masks, most of them, the surgical masks anyway, are made in China. And on the box, it says it is of no use and no good.
Yep.
And then you think about the cloth ones made at home. How often are they getting washed? And I know we're still on this whole mask thing, but...
And like I said, the mask is the hill to die on because it's the gateway to everything. And I wish I had more time to talk to Linda, but, you know, bless her heart. And you know, I'm sure she means well and everything else, but she doesn't understand exactly what the mask represents. It's not just a capitulation to... we just got to go along to get along. And as soon as we all wear masks, then it'll just go away. You got to remember, and this is the thing that frustrates me the most, is that it's never going to go away until we make it go away.
Right.
It's not leaving. We've been told.
Right.
We have been told hundreds and thousands and thousands and thousands of times that, oh, if we just do this, it's going to go away. If we just close down for 2 weeks, it's going to go away. If we just do this, come on, guys. Come on, man.
We've been lied to, and even with the
vaccination. We are being lied and manipulated over and over again. And so it's not okay to just say, oh, we need the kids back in schools, just make them wear masks. That's not okay. It's not okay to wear a mask. It's not okay to make anybody wear a mask. If you don't feel comfortable and you feel insecure about whatever diseases are out
there,
stay home, or you can wear a mask. Yep. But the fact is they're trying to mandate the masks, which is an incremental move to do mandate for vaccines.
And if it doesn't have psychological damage, then let me remind you of this.
It does have psychological damage.
Let me show you this story. I wanted to share with you regarding a post about the psychological damage being done to children with masks. I work in a neonatal ICU, and we had a micro preemie infant stay with us for about 5 months last year. We are an open unit, no private rooms, so parents have to keep their masks on at all times. When the mother took her infant home and took the mask off, the baby would cry hysterically until the mom put the mask back on. This lasted for a couple weeks until the baby got used to seeing her mom's face. Can you imagine the long-term developmental effects this is going to have, not only on infants, but our children?
Absolutely. And look, it's called imprinting.
Mm-hmm.
Children are doing what? They're growing.
Mm-hmm.
They're growing psychologically. They're growing physically, you know, in all these different ways. What are they doing? They are adapting and soaking everything in like a sponge.
Mm-hmm.
And if they're soaking in even this year segment, the amount of damage that might have been done to these children, we won't see the real effects for 10, 15 years. Imagine when this kid's an adult.
Right.
You know, how they're going to feel. Oh, you know, I guarantee you there's going to be kids.
The anxiety levels are already high.
Their anxiety is going to be through the roof. They're not going to want to go outside. They're not going to want to talk to anybody. They're not going to want to talk to a girl or a boy or, you know, and want to socialize in that sense. They're not going to want to be indoors with a bunch of people.
And Josh, here's the thing too.
And they won't know why.
They won't understand it.
Kill it right now and got rid of everything, they won't know why they feel that way.
As a foster parent, and I was trained as a foster parent, if I would have in my home needed masks to be worn because I was a germaphobe, you know, 10 years ago as a foster parent, it would have been considered abusive.
Yep.
I would not have been approved as a parent to be in foster care. And look at what we're doing to our children.
Well, and what is it doing? It's creating all this mental illness.
Mm-hmm.
And who runs all the mental illness programs?
Government.
Well, the government and, you know, the pedophiles and everybody else. They want that one-on-one with that child. and so they can screw them up even more and get them into their different programs and just turn their whole world upside down. And it's disgusting.
Yep. And as parents and for me as a grandparent, I'm absolutely appalled, and we need to do something about that. The other lie that's out there, and Mike Gallagher talked about this last night. I listened to Mike Gallagher on the show, and he's someone that went and got the vaccine himself, and he's had some health issues, I believe, personally tied to getting the vaccine, and others in my life who've gotten the vaccine have had health issues. But he's saying that they were promised 100%, if you get the vaccination, 100%, you will never get COVID again, and also you won't be in the hospital. And that is not what's happening, folks. In fact, I'm very concerned, and some of the things that Governor Brown is alluding to and talking about is that we won't have freedom here in Oregon until we have full vaccination. And this is concerning, and we there's a summit tomorrow at 5 p.m. We're going to talk a little bit more after this break about it. We're going to bring on a doctor. Dr. Henry is going to come and talk to us about that. We'll ask him some questions. He'll give us an update on what's going on, especially about informed consent. The folks that are getting these vaccinations, they're not getting all the information. And I think it's imperative that we get this information out.
And there's something that you guys should remember. There's something called ADE. It's antibody dependent enhancement. And what that is that gives you a hyper-focused reaction to regular flus, influenzas, colds, everything after you've been vaccinated. And so what my predictions are this coming winter is that a lot of people who have been vaccinated are going to get these ADE reactions, and it can cause, you know, blood clots in the heart, brain clots, tumors, different things like that, and basically create, you know, heart attacks and different scenarios to where we might have a real influx or a quote real pandemic that comes from people getting vaccinated.
And we're underprepared for that, I believe. We're going to talk to Dr. Henry when we come back from this. You're listening to Reliable News Talk Radio, KSLM, news that you can use. I see the phone calls. We'll open up the last segment to phone calls. That won't be until about 9:50 this morning. So if you want to call back then, that'd be great. Reliable News Talk Radio, KSLM.
Hey. Hello, good morning, how you doing?
It's a good morning. Wake up to a brand new day. This morning.
Good morning to you, Reliable News Talk Radio, KSLM. Together on this terrific Tuesday, and it's going to be a nice day, in fact. It's nice already with the weather at 52 degrees, going to warm up to 67 degrees. And I am looking right now at a seminar that's going to take place tomorrow, Josh. It's a COVID-19 Tribunal Exposing Willful Misconduct. Learn how you can take action. Organic Consumers Association. Tomorrow at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. That's 5 p.m. our time, April 28th. You can register at truth.organicconsumers.org. And one of the main speakers, which is so proud to have him here from Oregon, is Dr. Henry Ely. And Dr. Henry is on the line with us. Good morning to you. Thank you for coming in and being a part of the show this morning. We have got some questions for you.
All right. Good morning, Stacy and Josh. It's so wonderful to be here again, and thank you for having me.
Well, you have been on the forefront this whole time, this last year, and really helping people get an understanding of what we're facing in this agenda of pushing the mask wearing and this isolation and the staying home and pulling everybody apart and keeping them from the distance. And the big box stores can still continue, but the little businesses are struggling and can't be open, or maybe they can be open. And now the vaccination push. You have been very, very instrumental in getting accurate information, and you've even had some debates with some of the folks that have been, quote-unquote, the heads or the experts here in Oregon. I want to first say thank you for what you're doing, and then I want to throw it over to you to kind of give us an update and what we need to be doing to get fully aware of what's going on.
Well, thank you for that. And yes, I have talked with Dr. Dean Seidlinger on a couple of occasions, and I've been urging him to consider a proposal to issue nutritional guidance to all Oregonians. And that proposal has been available for over 2 months, and he's not talking to me right now. So I hope that changes. because you know, our kids deserve the best from us, and I want to make sure that I'm doing my part for not just my son and but all children in this great state, and parents as well, of course, who, you know, we have to bear that burden, right,
right.
Of the emotional toll that it takes watching our kids have to put these masks on. And I thought they were going to school, but it looks like they're going to prison, you
mm-hmm.
know,
yeah.
and that's a big problem for me. Now, when I look at the data for the Vaccine Adverse Events Reporting System, which is the federal surveillance tool we have on this, it's not a perfect tool by any stretch, and it's, there's a lot of underreporting going on. But when we look at it, we noticed that as of what was published last Friday, there have been 3,186 deaths in connection with these experimental COVID injections. We know that there have been 1,015 of those deaths within 24 hours. So that makes me immediately, as a doctor, very concerned about a causality, right? Because that's what the CDC keeps saying, is there's mm-hmm. no causality, there's no connection there. But it's like, well, wait a minute, 24 hours, that seems like that we need a little bit more thorough investigation. What's also deeply concerning is that there's at least 115 reports of spontaneous abortions, stillbirths, or miscarriages.
Wow.
Post-administration, and that's deeply troubling for me, as I'm sure it is for everybody listening. There's also been 86,080 reports of adverse events or injuries, and there's 6,282 of those have required immediate hospitalization because of severity. So that doesn't sound to me like a completely safe product. Now, I'm withholding judgment until the clinical trials are done. We know that the Moderna, and which is in partnership with the National Institutes of Health, which is to me a conflict of interest,
mm-hmm.
Is still in clinical trial until October 27th, 2022. We know that Johnson & Johnson are in clinical trial through January 2nd, 2023. And we know that Pfizer-BioNTech is in clinical trial through April 6, 2023 as well. So we don't know what the long-term impacts are with these experimental COVID injections, but we do know that there seems to be some real significant problems right now. Now, some people will say, well, I'm going to dismiss that because it's a small percentage of how many have been applied. And to that, I say two things. Number one, medicine does not accept a war mentality. We mm-hmm. don't accept a concept of acceptable number of casualties. You know,
mm-hmm.
this isn't a war. This is helping citizens get their lives back on track. This is helping to make people healthy. And I'm all for people having access to it as long as they're being properly informed and they understand the benefits potentially, but also the risks, and especially, Stacey, that these are still in clinical trial.
Exactly.
This has never happened before in human history, right?
Yes.
So, you know, so with that, one of the big issues that I have, as many people throughout the country, I'm not alone on this, is the ridiculous protections, legal protections from personal injury
mm-hmm.
Lawsuits that the manufacturers and our government has in these cases, but that they're continuing to discuss very sensitive topics such as vaccine passports, which mm-hmm. are completely unethical and completely will create a segregated, discriminated society. We can't go backwards. And also, even any discussion of mandates, you can't have a discussion of a mandate of something like this with the amount of just the data that I just discussed. So that's my point of view on it. And I'm open to people having different points of view, but I'm also open to us having objective conversations about these things, right? It can't be a one-size-fits-all kind of approach, particularly when we understand that treatments do exist. As crazy as it is for me mm-hmm. to say that, and I know the FDA may disagree with me and whatever, right? But I can't, in good conscience, I'm under oath as a doctor, I'm under oath to serve my patients, I can't in good conscience tell them that there is no treatment, but 30 million Americans have recovered for something. You know what I mean? That just
right.
doesn't make sense to me. So,
well, and let me ask you this question, because this has come up a lot in our conversation. We did a Parents' Rights and Education Summit over the weekend. I've had a lot mm-hmm. of discussion. I've been doing some education of advocates and how we can talk to our elected leaders. And it seems like it's underreported, even here in Oregon, the adverse effects. And it seems like they're saying, they're kind of coercing people by saying, well, if you get the vaccination, you're going to be protected against COVID. and hospitalization. Mm-hmm. And the numbers, they must not be lining up, because it seems like now all of a sudden we have this uptick of COVID again. Is there any explanation, any indication that you could see as to the explanation of this?
Well, we know that there are over 7,500 breakthrough cases, which means these are people who have been technically fully vaccinated but still contracted the virus and developed symptomatology to be diagnosed as COVID. So we know that there are at least 7,500 breakthrough cases, but my team started looking a little deeper at this, and we have a big problem with how they're assessing this. We think that it's very underreported, number mm-hmm. one. What's happening is that the cycle threshold value for PCR testing has been set erroneously high to 40
yes.
throughout this crisis for everything, right? And that, mm-hmm. that just brings in, invites in so many false positives, okay, especially over 30 if a person's value is 30 or higher, and particularly where there's no symptom presentation, okay? Asymptomatic transmission has never been definitively proven in the scientific literature. It
wow.
just hasn't. If anything, it's just the opposite. It's been disproven by the Wuhan study. But when we look at that, we went and looked, Josh, at the CDC's testing for the for breakthrough cases, how they're doing it.
Mm-hmm.
So a person's fully vaccinated, but they get sick, right? And a doctor says, well, hey, I think this might be that they have contracted SARS-CoV-2 virus, even though they've been vaccinated for it. They take that sample and they send it to the CDC or to a state health lab for sequencing and evaluation to see whether it was SARS-CoV-2 or not. That makes sense, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But here's the kicker. They set the CT value to 28. They will not accept a sample that has a CT value above a cycle threshold of 28.
So
they are saying right there that they don't want any potential false positives.
Exactly. But doesn't that really explain kind of a lot with what's going on with all these false positives? Is mm-hmm. they're basically mm-hmm. muddying the waters and spinning mm-hmm. it so many times. I don't know the exact process or basically what I've explained. And that creates the false positive. And essentially, it dilutes the test in itself to where, you know, they're not able to get an
correct.
Actual result. Now, Mal, what do you say?
Correct.
Go ahead.
I was just saying correct. Yeah.
Yeah, so basically, another thing that I kind of wanted to touch on, because we're talking about the underreporting, but that mm-hmm. kind of goes in tandem with the censorship going on all over the internet and the deplatforming mm-hmm. of people, you know, like the doctors, Simone Gold down in California, mm-hmm. you know, she mm-hmm. came out with those 17 doctors back in May, and they were all deplatformed, delicensed, everything else. You know, mm-hmm. There's another thing, Facebook just deleted a 120,000 person group of people reporting adverse mm-hmm. reactions. So they really
right.
don't want to get this information out. And we as people can kind of look around. I know you might know somebody. I know Stacy probably knows somebody. I know some people that have taken this mm-hmm. vaccine and they've had different reactions. I had a customer tell me the other day, I was like, hey, what are you up to? He's like, I'm just taking it easy today because everybody around mm-hmm. me that's gotten the vaccine, they get sick after. And I'm going, okay, mm-hmm. did you get it? And he goes, yeah. And I go, okay. You know,
right.
It's kind of a dodo bird scenario. But you know, as far as that goes, I mean, what kind of avenues and channels for information do you think people have? I mean, obviously you got your website and you're going to do your seminar tomorrow on that.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of things are you going to talk about? You're going to do a live stream event about the COVID-19 tribunal exposing the willful misconduct. And again, if I got the website correctly, it's truth.organicconsumers.org.
Mm-hmm.
Is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, all that's correct, Josh, and thank you for that. We have a major event tomorrow with some of the biggest names in the country, really in the world, talking about different aspects of this. We're going to talk about the origins that are more and more every day looking like what we thought it was, that this was a gain of function mm-hmm. experiment that mm-hmm. that got out somehow. which means lab origins, which means that's very concerning right there. Somebody opened Pandora's box and they shouldn't have.
And aren't they essentially experimenting on us in the sense, even with this vaccine, like you said it earlier, they're in clinical trials until 2 years from now. So how is it that they're able to administer these vaccines or shots that I call them? How are they able to administer these when they're still admitting in clinical trials? I mean, it's a little backwards, don't you think?
It's very backwards, and we've never done it this way before. Clinical trials always require animal studies prior to, and they actually didn't initiate any animal studies until they had already entered humans into these experimental groups for the injections with phase one and phase two of their clinical trials. So it's very backwards. It's actually illegal to coerce or force someone in to use an experimental product.
Mm-hmm.
We know that's true under 21 USC 360 BBB. We know that's true. So what's very interesting is when you start seeing the coercion with this, where you start seeing the, if you do this, we'll give you a cookie, you can go to Krispy Kreme. If you do this, mm-hmm. we'll give you a discount at this place. But now, because we've started seeing that the first wave of people that were really, really scared and ran to get this potential solution for themselves.
Stay on the line, Dr. H. We're going to jump right into a break. We're going to pick up. We got Dr. H on the line talking about the COVID vaccine and the adverse reactions about that. Stay with us.
Hey, yeah, you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
It's a good morning. Wake up to a brand new day. This morning.
Good morning to you, Reliable News Talk Radio, KSLM. Hello, I'm Stacey Ann. Got Josh Michael in the studio, and we're talking to Dr. H. Oh, it's such good information. We could probably talk about this for several hours. In fact, I want to again say that there's a seminar tomorrow that you can sign up for online, truth.organicconsumers.org. There's going to be a wonderful seminar online, free public event where we can learn all the latest and what's going on. And Doctor, you've just released another paper. It's like your fifth research paper, and it's full online, and I'll put a link on that as well. One of the questions I have for you, and it hits me personally, I'm to go on a mission trip in a couple weeks to Costa Rica. And it's the first time I've left the country, or the second time I've left the country before I got back into country before they required a test to come back in. Now, I'm wondering, I've not yet had to have a COVID test. I've not been around anybody or exposed or any of that. Do they give options coming back into country? What kind of test that's acceptable? And what should I be aware of taking these tests coming back in?
Well, I think first and foremost, you have to check with the airline that you're using, because they may have their own unique set of rules. It's kind of a wild, wild west situation right now, which is not to the benefit of everyone. So in terms of testing, many will say PCR testing. I think many airlines are offering PCR testing at the site, but I think also like the rapid PCR test thing. But one, those are very inaccurate, up to 50% or even more inaccuracy. So it could be false positive, false negative.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the things that we've unearthed is something called T-Direct. There's a company called T-Direct.com. that can actually do a blood draw for you and with 95% accuracy detect whether or not your T cells are primed to deal with SARS-CoV-2 virus. And if they are, that means you've been exposed and you have natural adaptive immunity. So it'd be hard pressed, and it's EUA and FDA approved. So it'd be hard pressed for me to see that test wouldn't be valid. And it's the one I'm kind of recommending to people.
Okay.
Who want to get some testing for travel, but I would confirm that first and foremost with the airline that you're using. That
excellent.
Would be acceptable.
Well, thank you for that help. And I know that people are there's such confusion, and one of the things that you're really pushing for is public trust again. Data is all over the place. People don't understand. Even it's interesting when you see the President of the United States fully vaccinated, you know, and he got a shot on TV or whatever with the media there. And now he's still wearing a mask. It's like people don't trust. They don't know. And yet they're complaining that no one's getting the vaccination or people are hesitant. Talk to us a little bit about where do we go from here? And if you were the public health specialist in Oregon or even in our nation, what would you advise people to do?
Well, first and foremost, I would advise everyone to work with their family care physician and to start looking over the research that is in ridiculous, absurd support of vitamin D, vitamin A, vitamin C, and zinc primarily as preventative measures. We know that vitamin D by itself, when a person's bloodstream is above 55 nanograms per milliliter, we know that they are 50% less likely to contract the SARS-CoV-2 virus, and it doesn't matter age or cultural heritage or where you live, it just doesn't matter. So one of the things I've been working with very successfully in consulting with patients regarding positive confirmed COVID infections is using just nutrient therapies to resolve it, and it's worked every single time. I'm well over 100 people that I've helped now in the last year with this, and it's a simple strategy. It's something that we've been doing in my family. You know, I take 5,000 IUs of vitamin D a day, sometimes a little bit more. I make sure I'm taking around 10,000 IUs of vitamin A. I'm taking about 3,000 to 5,000 milligrams of vitamin C, and I'm taking about 25 to 40 milligrams of zinc. And not even every day, Stacey, but it's definitely about 4 to 5 times a week. And what it does is it's not just a potential preventative for SARS-CoV-2. It's really for anything that you might come in contact with in this crazy world. So it's a good strategy. And in the expert forum that I was on February 10th in Yamhill County with Dr. Seidlinger, the chief epidemiologist for the OHA, he admitted, we have him on video evidence, saying that they haven't done enough to promote nutritional guidance for Oregonians, and that it is that nutrition is an essential component in minimization of the adverse events, the severity of adverse events, and accelerated recovery from this as well. So it defies, we know nationally that Dr. Fauci is taking, from what he says, 8,000 IUs of vitamin D a day as well. So the literature is supporting the issuance of nutritional guidance. So it's perplexing to me that we can't get that additional guidance. We can get guidance on masking and staying 6 feet apart without really any empirical evidence to substantiate it.
And
but we can't get the nutrition out to the people. What were you going to say, Josh?
Well, I was going to say, isn't that interesting? They have this budget. You know, we can drive down the freeway. Basically, every other billboard says, save lives, wear a mask, save lives, wear a mask. Mm-hmm. It's on the side of buses. It's everywhere. Friendships last longer when you wear masks. Just this insane amount of money that's been spent on educating people to wear a mask and to get your vaccine. Right. And we all know now that the COVID relief plan that was passed recently, they allotted about $1 billion for marketing for vaccines to go toward Hollywood and different, educators and different things to kind of push that information out. But isn't it really telling kind of, the health and safety divisions and health departments, are they really looking out for our safety? And really, isn't it up to us to kind of make our own decisions and exercise our liberties to really be able to make those medical decisions? And like you said, consult with your family doctor and not necessarily reach out to the, quote, health experts. And it doesn't really kind of emphasize a larger agenda. You know, you mentioned something about the vaccine passports and them trying to roll that out. They're really making a hard push for that. So what do you think about that?
Well, I think we put our money where our mouth is in this country, and I think when you follow the money, it tells you some uncomfortable truths about what's going on, in reference to Black and minority communities. I know $3.5 billion was allocated to address what they are terming vaccine hesitancy. And I go, well, it's not hesitancy. It's call it what it is. It's distrust. And let's not kid ourselves that we don't have a enormous amount of history to substantiate that distrust.
No kidding.
And I think the most important thing for us is to ask questions,
mm-hmm.
to demand proof.
Yes.
My thing with everybody is, if you prove it, I'll follow it.
That's,
you
know, exactly,
I mean?
Right.
I'm an objective scientist, but, mm-hmm. but prove it. Prove that distancing works. Prove that masking works. Prove that there's a possibility of reinfection. Prove that the vaccines provide long-term immunity. Prove that that the variants are dangerous. Prove that hospitalizations are a significant issue. Right now, I was looking at the data before I came on the show. December 14th, there were 1,489 beds allocated specifically for COVID patients. By April 23rd, that number was reduced, and I'm sure this had to be authorized by the governor. It was reduced by 492 beds to now there's only 997 beds allocated for COVID people. Why? Because there wasn't the demand. It wasn't mm-hmm. needed, right? And then you go a little bit deeper into the hospitalization data, and they go, well, you know, COVID is spiking and it's flooding and all this other stuff. And it's like, well, wait a minute. Let's look at the data. It's published by OHA. Did you know that only 7.1% of all cases currently in hospitalization are due to or have some relationship to COVID? We don't even know if they're specifically for COVID. If you could go in to get your gallbladder removed, get a COVID test, it could be a false positive.
Yeah.
And you could
man.
Be counted as a COVID.
And we've been seeing that.
It's,
yeah.
Since the outset, right?
So, yeah. And anyway. We so appreciate it. We wish we had another hour to talk. We're wrapping up here, Dr. H. I want to encourage people, truth.organicconsumers.org. You'll be speaking there, many others. Thank mm-hmm. you for your work. We'll schedule you again for a whole hour. How's that?
Thanks, Dr. H.
I'd love to come back. Thank you both so much. And thank you to everyone in the audience for listening and asking questions.
Yes.
It's so important right
now. Have a great day. Thank you.